The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Princess in the Chest features murder, alcoholism, and a terrifying ghost. Please exercise caution for children under 13. As she walked through the dark church, Clara's hand quivered, causing the lantern she held to jingle softly. She was trying to be quiet, but her footsteps echoed loud enough to wake the dead, which was exactly what she was afraid of. It was her first day working in the castle, and it hadn't gone well. The other maids ignored her, treating her like an outsider. In order to be accepted by the group, they told her she would have to perform a rite of passage, mop the chapel floor of the royal church after sundown. It seemed easy enough, so she agreed. But they teased her, saying,
"You better hope the princess approves of you, or else her ghost will eat you up."
Shivers crawled up Clara's spine as she worked. She kept reminding herself that the same princess they claimed haunted the church was alive. In fact, she was the queen. These stories about her ghost were absurd. Yet, every creak in the old church still made her pulse race. As she mopped, she made her way to the stairs of the pulpit. But once she took a step up, a slab of marble slid out from under her foot. Clara watched in horror as the slab teetered and then crashed into the dark space it had been covering. Kneeling down, she lowered her lantern into the hole and peered inside. Clara's scream rang out through the church, startling the birds in the rafters. She sprinted to the door, calling for help, but the lantern she dropped continued to glow, illuminating a hidden vault filled to the brim with human bones. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. Today, we're telling the story of The Princess in the Chest, a Danish fairy tale about a young princess who is cursed and dies, only to rise every night from death to kill the sentries watching over her crypt. The oldest written translation of The Princess and the Chest was published in 1897 by Andrew Lang and his wife Leonora in The Pink Fairy Book, one of 12 volumes in their collection of fairy tales gathered from countries all over the world. Though the Langs were the first authors to put the story into written form, the tale has been passed down by oral tradition for generations. However, exactly where and when it originated is unknown. While The Princess and the Chest is Danish, variations of the tale appear throughout Europe. Some of the most similar include the French story La Ramée and the Phantom, and The Princess in the Shroud, which is found primarily in Russia. Though small details between these stories may vary, each follows an unlikely hero as his poor choices land him in a dangerous situation. And in order to survive, he must trust the wisdom of a magical being whose powers outshine his own. At its core, The Princess in the Chest is a Christian morality lesson about overcoming human flaws and insurmountable obstacles through faith, even if that obstacle is a face-off with a murderous royal ghost. Queen Elin sat at her vanity and gazed at her own reflection. Glimmers of silver were appearing in her long auburn hair, and crow's feet seemed to have sprouted from the corners of her eyes overnight. There was no denying it. Her time was running out. Elin began to cry. It had been almost a decade since she'd married King Frederick. Then she was a great beauty, and they were deeply in love. Their land flourished under their rule. It was a time of peace. The only thing they lacked was an heir. 7 years passed without a successful pregnancy, and Frederick began to resent Elin. He took to storming into her chambers to punish her for their misfortune. Nights were filled with the sound of his rage, and through the years it seemed every piece of furniture had been broken during one of his fits. Even her vanity mirror was shattered. Elin stared at her aging face in the splintered glass, but just as she began wiping away her tears, King Frederick burst through the door. She braced herself. But Frederick didn't scream. He didn't say a word. Instead, he paced back and forth as if a man possessed. Then he stopped. Without looking at her, he said, "I cannot stand this shame any longer. I've decided to embark on a year-long journey. If you have a child by the time I return, I will love you beyond measure. But if you fail me again, Elin, I will find myself a new queen." Then he left the room, slamming the door behind him. Elin began to weep. How could she possibly have a child in 1 year? She'd been trying for so long, and she was only growing older. Her sobs echoed through the castle halls for days. Nothing and no one could console her, and soon her servants learned to avoid her chambers altogether. Eventually, a maid gathered her courage and visited the queen.
Excuse me, my grace. I know of a wise old woman who may be able to help. Her instructions are, unusual, but if you follow them closely, you'll have a child before the year's end.
For the first time in days, Elin's crying stopped. She demanded to see this wise old woman at once. When the old lady entered her chambers, Elin was shocked. She looked impossibly old and dirty, hunched over and barefoot, with long toenails that clicked against the floor, and gray hair tangled with leaves and twigs. The queen was so disgusted, she almost sent the old crone away. But before she could summon her guards, the old lady spoke.
"I may look unsightly, dear queen, but miracles come from unexpected places, and I believe I have yours. That is, if you still want it."
Elin stared at her, dumbstruck. Had the old woman just read her thoughts? The old lady continued,
"The spell for a child is a complicated one, so you must listen to my words closely."
First, she needed to fast through the night and go to the king's garden before the sun rose. On the left-hand side, there would be a great oak, and underneath it would be a small brown bush with three buds. She needed to pluck the middle bud and eat it. Then, in 6 months, she would give birth to a princess. Elin's heavy heart lightened. That was it? She couldn't believe it. She thanked the old lady profusely, but the woman just cackled.
"Oh, I'm afraid I'm not quite finished, Your Excellency. Like I said, the spell is a complicated one, and my next instructions are the most important."
The old woman went on to explain that as soon as the child was born, she had to be given to a nursemaid of the old woman's choosing. She would care for the princess until her 14th birthday. But before that day, no one could lay eyes upon her. Otherwise, the old woman warned, sorrow and misfortune would plague the kingdom. Elin grew quiet. It was not the solution she had hoped for, but she was without another option, so she agreed to the bargain. That night, she struggled to sleep and her stomach growled, but as the old woman instructed, she did not eat. Then, before the sunrise, she slipped past her guards and into the garden. The great oak tree was only a dark shadow in the dim blue light, but Elin knew the garden paths well, and as she approached, she saw the brown bush. It was a peculiar-looking thing. Dew puddled on its hairy leaves and dripped from the ends of long spikes. Elin plucked the soft middle bulb and popped it into her mouth. At first it tasted sweet, but then it turned terribly bitter. She fought the urge to spit it out. Suddenly, Elin was exhausted. She returned to her bedchambers and for the first time in weeks, slept peacefully. She stayed asleep through the day and the following night. A few weeks later, the castle filled with celebration when the queen's pregnancy was confirmed. And after 6 blissful months, Elin went into labor. She diligently followed the old woman's instructions, even tying a cloth around her eyes lest she accidentally catch a glimpse of the child. Her daughter's first cries brought tears of joy to her eyes, but soon they disappeared down the hall as the nursemaid the wise woman had chosen took the princess into the farthest wing of the castle. When King Frederick returned home from his year-long journey, he was overjoyed to hear the news.
"My God, it's a miracle! But where is she? I must see my daughter at once!"
Elin told Frederick about the deal she had struck. She was terrified that he would decide to throw her out of the castle, but to her surprise, he reluctantly agreed to follow the old woman's commands. As the princess grew, the nursemaid kept the queen and king informed of her progress, and sometimes, while strolling through the gardens, they could hear their daughter's laughter flowing from the open windows. They pined for the day they could meet her, yet still they never broke their promise. But as the years dragged on, the king grew bitter. Finally, they made it to the day before her 14th birthday. While walking in the gardens, Elin and Frederick once again heard the princess's laughter. Her voice was so sweet, melodious, and grown up. Frederick thought about the years he had lost with his only child, and his blood began to boil.
"This is all a bunch of nonsense. I can't and I won't wait any longer."
Elin begged him to reconsider, reminding him that if they broke the old woman's agreement, terrible misfortune would be brought onto their kingdom. But Frederick just scoffed.
"I am the king, and I've followed that old crone's rules for far too long. No one has the right to keep my daughter from me."
Then he stormed off to the princess's wing of the castle. When he reached her door, Frederick hesitated. He pressed his forehead against the barrier that had separated them for so long and listened. Frederick could hear her sweet voice on the other side, and his determination returned. He twisted the knob and opened the door. Coming up, the entire kingdom faces the consequences of their king's impatience. Now, back to the story. King Frederick and Queen Elin desired nothing more than to have a child. After trying everything else, the queen struck a bargain with a magical old woman. Though they were granted a daughter, the old woman warned them not to look at her until her 14th birthday. But just the day before, the king refused to wait any longer and stormed into the princess's chambers. When he opened the door, the nursemaid threw herself in front of the king to block his view of the girl. Frederick shoved her aside, but as soon as he saw his daughter, he froze. She was more beautiful than he ever imagined. Her hair looked as if it was spun from pure gold, and her eyes were as blue as a clear summer day. The princess ran toward her father and wrapped her arms around his neck. Then, to his surprise, she began to cry.
"Father, what have you done? Now tomorrow I will die. Did you not love me enough to wait?"
King Frederick wiped the tears from his daughter's angelic face. Of course he loved her, and she wasn't going to die. Such silly talk. But then the princess's body began to tremble. Her eyes rolled back in her head, and she spoke in a voice more ancient than her own.
"Listen closely, King. The girl will die, and you must choose between one of three fates: a plague of black pestilence, a long and bloody war, or you can lay her body in a plain coffin, place it in the church, and instruct a sentinel to guard it every night for 1 year."
Frederick felt a chill crawl up his spine. Terrified, he managed to reply to the ancient voice. He would choose the third option. The girl nodded, gasped for air, and then crumpled in his arms. All of the best doctors in the realm were immediately summoned, but the princess never regained consciousness. And just as the voice had warned, she died the next day. The king and queen wept bitterly over their daughter's body, but Frederick had learned his lesson, and this time he would keep his end of the bargain. So, before the sun went down, he placed the princess's body in a plain wooden coffin and set it in the royal church. Then he instructed a sentinel to watch over it. The next morning, however, the sentinel was gone. They searched high and low in the chapel, but they couldn't find any trace of him. It was decided he must have simply abandoned his post, so that night a new sentinel took his place. However, the next morning he had also disappeared. This pattern continued. Every evening, a man was instructed to stand watch over the princess's coffin, and every sunrise, he would be gone. Eventually, rumors spread that the princess's ghost would rise during the night and eat her sentinels. Soldiers began to refuse to guard the dead princess, and if forced, they deserted. No one wanted to face off with a deadly specter. The king even began offering a large reward for anyone brave enough to spend the night by the coffin. This worked for a while, and men set aside their fears of ghost stories for the right price. But no one ever got to collect the payment, because by the time the sun rose, they had vanished. For almost the entire year, this tragic cycle repeated night after night. Then an outsider came to town. Christian took a long swig of ale and sighed. That was better. His journey had been a long one, and as soon as he reserved his room at the inn, he figured he'd earned himself a pint or two. He was a strapping man, a young smith, but he had been out of work for quite some time, so he traveled to the capital in the hopes he'd find a job. But first, he intended to enjoy his ale. Little did he know, he was being watched. Across the tavern were two officers who'd been tasked with finding a man to watch over the princess's crypt. They went around town for hours, attempting anything from bribery to threats to secure a guard. But it was nearly dusk, and they were empty-handed. They were certain King Frederick would have them flogged. But then, a miracle. A newcomer was sitting across the tavern. The officers sat down next to Christian and ordered him a drink. Christian loved good company. He and his new friends sang drinking songs and laughed the evening away. And after a few more pints, he began to boast,
"You see, I'm not afraid of anything, man or beast. Hell, when I was a lad, I fought a wild boar with my bare hands and made a mighty fine roast with him after."
The officers laughed and laughed. Then they made him a proposition.
"You may be just the man we've been looking for. How would you like to be rich by the end of the night?"
Christian leaned in closer, trying to focus his blurred vision. They explained that they had a job, a simple job, All he had to do was spend the night in the royal church watching over the princess's coffin. Then in the morning, the king would pay him 100 golden coins. Drunk or not, Christian knew enough to be shocked at the offer. That much money for one night of work was unheard of. A nagging feeling at the back of his mind told him it was too good to be true, but he pushed it out of his head. After all, his coin purse had grown too light for comfort, and a man had to eat and drink. So he took a long drink from his pint, shouted to the sky that he wasn't afraid of anything, and accepted the job. The soldiers celebrated his decision by purchasing another bottle and then took it to go. They stumbled to the church, singing loudly while they passed the ale. But by the time they arrived, night had begun to fall, and despite Christian's offer, the officers refused to come inside the chapel to drink. Instead, they wished him luck and promptly locked the door behind him. How strange, Christian thought. But before he could think more about his friend's odd behavior, he caught sight of the coffin. He swaggered through the empty church and stepped up to the casket.
"I guess it's just you and me tonight, lass. Cheers."
He tapped his bottle against the coffin lid and gulped down the rest of his ale. Christian spent the first 2 hours of his watch contemplating all the things he could purchase with the reward money. He could buy rounds for the entire pub and maybe even open his own blacksmith shop. But as time ticked by, the alcohol began to wear off, and soon fear took its place. He had a bad feeling deep in his gut. Why had the officers locked the door behind him? And why had they refused to come inside? Something was very, very wrong. Christian ran through the church searching for an exit, but each one was either barricaded or locked. Soon he found a door in the steeple which had been left open, but as he began to step through, a strange movement caught the corner of his eye. He shrieked. Before him, as if conjured from thin air, was a dwarf. He had a long gray beard and a crooked nose, and though he only came up to Christian's knees, the air around him crackled with a formidable energy. The dwarf chuckled at his dumbstruck expression and calmly said,
"Good evening, Christian. May I ask where you're going?"
Christian wondered if he was still drunk. He blinked rapidly, but the tiny man was still there. So, figment of his imagination or not, he decided to answer his question.
"Yes, good evening, sir. I'm not going anywhere, just, getting some fresh air."
He tried to walk around the dwarf, but the tiny man snapped his fingers, and suddenly Christian could no longer move his feet. The dwarf shook his head. He knew Christian was trying to run away, but he couldn't allow it. Christian had to watch over the princess. He had made a promise, after all, and what sort of man didn't keep his promises? Christian began to cry. Through big blubbering, he admitted to the dwarf that he was afraid. Couldn't he set him free, please? The dwarf told Christian he had no choice except to stay at his post. But as he watched the hulking man continue to cry, he took pity on him.
All right, there's no need for tears. If you wish to survive the night, you must listen to my instruction very carefully. Can you do that?"
Christian sniffled, then nodded, and the dwarf gave him his advice.
"You must get to the pulpit before midnight and hide inside of it. No matter what you see or what you hear, you must not move. Only until you hear the lid of the coffin slam back into place will you be safe."
Then he snapped his fingers, and Christian was pushed back into the church. After the door locked behind him, Christian sprinted to the pulpit and waited. The church was completely silent, but all he could hear was his own heartbeat thudding inside of his ears. Then, just as the clock struck midnight, the coffin lid clattered to the ground. When we return, Christian meets the cursed princess. Now back to the story. After the sentries hired to guard the princess's coffin kept disappearing, the king was at a loss. But soon a young smith named Christian strolled into town and drunkenly agreed to watch her crypt. As the night wore on, his liquid courage wore off, but he prayed the advice from a magical dwarf would help him survive. Christian was standing behind the pulpit as the dwarf had instructed when he heard the lid of the coffin clatter to the ground. He watched in horror through a crack in the wood as an unnaturally gaunt limb, black as ink, gripped the edge of the casket. Then it sat up. The thing was wearing a dress fit for royalty, but spikes protruded from its skin, tearing the cloth, and its body was distorted and covered in scales. It slowly turned its head in Christian's direction, revealing blood-red eyes and needle-like teeth. Then it let out a loud, banshee-like shriek. In a scratchy, disjointed voice, it called out,
"Where are you, sentry? Come out now and I will spare your suffering. But if you make me wait, I will cause you more pain than any mortal has ever endured."
Christian sat paralyzed, but he couldn't quiet his breathing. He took in gasping gulps of air. Eventually, the dead princess followed the sound until she caught sight of him. She cackled.
"Should have given yourself over to a swift death when you had the chance. Now I will have some fun."
She began to climb the stairs to the pulpit, but halfway up she collided with an invisible wall. Try as she might, she could not get within reach of her prey. The princess let out a long snarl, drenching Christian's face in foul-smelling spit. Then the clock struck one. The ghost gave one last howling wail and returned to her coffin. Once Christian heard the lid slam back into place, he collapsed. Too terrified to move from the shelter of the pulpit, he drifted off into an exhausted sleep. Christian woke to the morning light. He groaned, shielding his face from the sun. But his sleepy haze was interrupted by a key unlocking the front door. He pulled himself to his feet and stumbled to the casket. A group of officers, led by their colonel, peered into the church, expecting to find it empty. Instead, they saw Christian standing at attention next to the coffin, seemingly unfazed. The shocked colonel eyed the recruit up and down, then asked for a report of the night's events. Christian stuttered. If he told them the truth, he knew they would think he'd lost his mind, so he said nothing at all. The colonel simply nodded and brought him to the king. King Frederick didn't even bother to change from his nightdress as he rushed to meet the first sentinel to survive the night. He handed Christian the reward money and began to pester him with questions about the princess.
"Did you see my daughter? How did she look? Did she want you to tell me anything?"
Christian didn't think the king would take kindly to the truth about the princess's state, so he simply told him that he didn't gather any information. His job was to stand his post, and that is what he did. The king clasped his hands together and laughed.
"Such a dutiful soldier you are. My men could learn a thing or two from you. Tell me, how would you like to stand watch again? As you know, I pay handsomely."
Christian shuddered and declined the offer, but the king, still in good spirits, invited him to breakfast anyway. King Frederick had his servants bring Christian their best wine to toast his bravery, and every time his goblet ran dry, he motioned for the servants to fill it. Once his guest was visibly drunk, Frederick asked him once again if he would reconsider the offer to stand guard at the coffin again. Christian laughed and told him that he would take the job for 200 gold coins. The king agreed to the terms. Christian left the castle with his pockets full of gold, went into town and bought the pub around. He spent the entire day drinking and bragging about his bravery to anyone who would listen. But once the clock struck 8, he found himself once again locked inside the church. As the alcohol wore off, the memories of the shrieking monster from the night before came flooding back. Christian quickly found an unlocked door, but before he could flee, the same long-bearded dwarf appeared, and once again, Christian was frozen in place. But this time, the dwarf gave him new instructions.
"Now listen closely. Tonight you will stand in front of the altar while holding the Book of Hymns. No matter what you see or hear, you must not move until the coffin lid slides back into place. If you do this, you will survive the night."
As soon as the dwarf snapped his fingers, Christian hurried to the chapel. He was safely at the altar, clutching the Book of Hymns, when the clock struck midnight, and the lid of the coffin crashed to the floor. The princess shrieked when she spotted Christian. The terrifying beast ran at him with inhuman speed. Then, right before she could sink her sharp claws into his soft flesh, she was stopped short. Christian's legs shook as he watched the princess growl and scratch at the invisible barrier. But then he noticed something strange. She was slightly less frightening. The spikes that protruded from her skin were gone, leaving only scales, and her needled teeth had returned to normal. When the clock struck 1, she let out a final snarl and returned to her coffin. Once the lid closed, Christian collapsed against the altar and slunk to the ground. There he slept with the hymn book still clenched to his chest. The following morning went much like the one before. King Frederick offered him the job for a third night, but Christian refused. So he eased Christian's fears with a large breakfast and plenty of wine. After drinking deeply, Christian told the king that he would guard the princess one more time if he could have half of the kingdom. The king, acknowledging the apparent dangers of the post, agreed to the terms. Christian was only locked inside of the church for 1 hour before he decided to escape. He reasoned that the king would never actually give him half of the kingdom, and if he left early, the dwarf maybe would not catch him in time. So he found an open window, carefully dropped himself to the ground, and ran to the beach. There he climbed into a rowboat and pushed himself out to sea. He laughed, certain he had escaped, but a familiar voice called from the shore.
"Good evening, Christian. Where are you going?"
Christian stared at the dwarf in disbelief. He began to row with all of his might, but no matter how hard he pulled against the water, the boat only moved toward the shore. The dwarf greeted him with a snap of his fingers, and they were back inside the church. Once again, the dwarf gave him his instructions. This time, he told Christian that he needed to lie next to the coffin. When the princess climbed out, he would then slip inside and lie there until sunrise. If he succeeded, they would both be freed. Christian ran to the chapel and laid flat against the coffin, trembling. He had to use every bit of willpower not to flee, but the dwarf's instructions had saved his life the last 2 nights. He knew his survival depended on listening to him again. When the clock struck midnight, the coffin lid crashed to the floor. Christian held his breath, but as the princess climbed over him, he noticed she'd changed. Her skin was no longer scaly, and her limbs, once long and distorted, were proportional, but her eyes were still blood red. Once her back was turned, Christian rolled into the empty coffin. Inside, the smell was vile and rotten, but there was no turning back. The ghost tore through the church, searching for Christian, but when he was nowhere to be found, she screamed,
"My father has sent no sentry. War and pestilence will now begin."
She chanted this phrase over and over in piercing shrieks. Christian pressed his palms against his ears to deaden the painful sound. Then, after what felt like an eternity, the clock struck one. The princess fell silent. Christian was terrified she would appear at any moment and climb into the coffin on top of him. But instead, he heard the most unexpected sound, a church hymn. It began softly, then grew louder until it rang through the chapel. Hundreds of footsteps sounded against the floor as if people were congregating in the pews. Christian heard a priest begin to speak from the direction of the pulpit. He was performing what sounded like a wedding ceremony. Then, as the sun shined over the horizon, the sounds of the wedding, the priest, the footsteps, the music, all faded out of existence. Christian jumped out of the coffin and fell to his knees, thanking God for getting him through the night. Then he heard a soft crying from the far end of the church. He spotted the princess lying in front of the altar, now returned to her natural human state. Christian couldn't believe what he was seeing. Instead of the body of the hideous beast, he now saw the most beautiful girl he had ever laid eyes on. Her golden hair shone silver in the moonlight, and her tattered, filthy dress was gone, leaving her shivering in nothing but a clean, white shroud. Christian approached her slowly, took off his coat, and wrapped it around her. The princess smiled gently at him and took his hand in hers.
"You've freed me from the sorcery that has plagued me since my birth, and for that I have no words to thank you. But if you will take it, I can offer you my heart."
The princess explained that the phantom service Christian had heard was a wedding ceremony for them. The marriage was binding, but he still had a choice. They could live as husband and wife or not. But there was a catch. Even if they were separated, they could never marry anyone else. Christian was dumbstruck. It all sounded more like an ultimatum than a choice. But before he could consider it further, he heard the sound of a key in the door. King Frederick and Queen Elin stood in the doorway of the chapel. As soon as they spotted their daughter, alive, sitting at the altar, they fell to their knees. The princess leapt to her feet and ran into their arms. They held their daughter and wept freely, thanking God for returning her to them. As promised, Christian was granted half of the kingdom. But seeing as the princess was quite beautiful, and he had little choice, he also decided to accept her proposal. And in time, they ruled the realm together. Eager to put their rather ugly meeting behind them, the princess refused to speak about her brief time among the undead, and soon the stories of the princess's ghost began to quiet. As for what Christian saw those three fateful nights, he simply insisted he'd been drinking more wine than was good for him. While the princess in the chest may seem like nothing more than a ghost story, like with many folk stories, it's rooted in an ideology. And the most obvious clue is our anti-hero, who is deliberately named Christian. Christianity was well established in Denmark by the middle of the 11th century, and many Danish churches were built with symbolic structures, including two which played a large part in this tale, the pulpit and the altar. The pulpit represents the Word of God, while the altar represents religious sacrifice or a gesture of faith. On the first night when Christian hides from the princess's ghost inside of the pulpit, he's symbolically being protected by God's word. And on the second night, when he stands in front of the altar in clear sight of the ghost, Christian demonstrates his trust in God's protection. Then, finally, by crawling inside the coffin, he takes the place of the princess in death, just as Jesus took the place of humanity on the cross. But of course, Christian did not save the princess on his own merit. He was a flawed human, a drunk, who had to be guided and even forced every step of the way. A reminder to Christians that salvation is achieved through faith alone. And a reminder to all listeners that persistence and courage can turn even the most monstrous situation into something beautiful. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Amanda Hobseth, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.